Feel the Force. It's Wellbeing Wednesday, and the real thing is our friendly local therapist, Mr. Gavin Sharp. Good morning, Gavin.
Good morning. Good morning, Rob. Good morning, Sarah.
Lovely to see you again.
On this rather wet, drizzly Wednesday morning.
It's going to clear up later.
Good.
We've had fantastic response to these programmes over the last couple of months, and today's subject is, well, it's tricky, really, and very personal, because it's addiction. And, you know, one of the main things about addiction is that it's very hard to tell yourself that you are actually addicted to something, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think the first stage for most people with an addiction is getting through the denial. We minimise it. We say, well, it's not that bad. Or we say everybody does it. Or we say, if I really wanted to give up, I could. So we sort of come up with all these reasons why we're not really addicted.
Complete anonymity. If you would like to ask Gavin something this morning, then please feel free to email studio@rivieradio.mc. Don't have to use your real name, obviously. And we will be asking Gavin some of your questions after 9 o'clock this morning. Just to enlarge on the subject a little bit, Gavin, you say here addiction is often referred to as the hole in the soul. It robs the addicts of their freedom and control.
Absolutely. So I think at the heart of all addictions is two points. I think the first is, what is addiction? Addiction is we are trying to escape our emotional reality. And very often there is so much pain that we're holding that we do something else that will take us away from that pain. And the nature of addiction is it's compulsive and we can't stop. And the second point, which I hope we'll have a chance to talk about, is, well, what's behind that pain? What's behind the emotional reality that we're trying to escape? And it's very often that there's a dysfunctional childhood, there's early trauma. So it's the hole in the soul, because somewhere along the line, we lose touch with who we are, we lose touch with our families, and we find escape in something else.
Do you think there's a difference between addiction and obsession?
Yes, I do, because I think that we can be obsessed about something, but it doesn't necessarily have negative consequences. We may not have withdrawal symptoms for something that we obsess about. So there are one or two things that really make addiction what it is, and such as the withdrawal, such as the compulsive, we can't give it up. So it's a fine line, and we confuse the two sometimes. But yes, there's a difference between obsessiveness and doing something compulsively in an addiction sense.
And there's also a vast difference between a physical addiction, such as addiction to opioids, for example, and a psychological addiction to gambling or sex, say.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, for a long time, society, therapists, we didn't really take behavioural addiction seriously, because all of the research was looking at substance or alcohol abuse. But what we do know now is that we can be pretty much addicted to most things that are pleasurable, and that includes a whole range of behaviours.
Okay, because gambling in particular is becoming a real problem. I mean, it ruins lives, it really does.
Absolutely. One of the tragedies, if I can use that word, about gambling, you know, is that kids are getting hooked online so early. And with most addictions, the earlier we start, the greater the impact it will be on our brains, on an evolving brain, and the harder it will be later in life to give up. So there are kids who are just, you know, for a pound, for a euro, they're playing these games online, and then slowly but surely some of them become hooked, and that really starts to develop. You know, we think about gambling as, you know, sat in a casino, but these days gambling can be that, but it can also be sat in front of the TV with my iPhone.
And the governments have been really slow to act on this, because whereas, you know, advertising for tobacco and alcohol has been severely restricted or even banned in many cases, you know, the television is still full of adverts for gambling firms.
Absolutely. And we're into a really controversial area here, which is that how do you, you know, how do you take action for behaviours that are pleasurable? Because this is also about kind of civil liberties, because there's nothing wrong per se, let's leave any moral judgments out, with gambling or with shopping or with television or any of those things that give us pleasure. But at the point to which they stop giving us pleasure and they become addictive, then we're into kind of troubled territory. But absolutely, some of these cases, the porn industry, the gambling industry, it's worth billions.
So have you got a tip for the 545 at Kempton then?
Yeah, see me afterwards.
Gavin Sharp will be here after 9 o'clock speaking about addiction today. Studio Riviera Radio .mc if you would like to ask Gavin a question.
And now it's time for Woofer of the Week on 106.5 Riviera Radio.
It's Woofer of the Week time and two for the price of one this week, Dawn Howard. Hello.
Hello to you. Yes, today we've got not one, but two lovely woofers needing a good new home. The reason we have two is that they are sisters and they've never been separated before. So it would be fantastic to find them a home where they can stay together, of course. They are 2.5 years old, so adult dogs. They're small white terriers. I think probably a mix between something like a Westie and a Cairn Terrier. So they've got lots of energy and they need to be walked and played with. They are okay with other dogs, but they're not good with cats, I'm afraid. They are called Bianca and Poupette. They are microchipped, vaccinated and sterilised. And they're currently waiting for their forever humans at the Refuge Jean Duflot in Antibes. That's the one by Decathlon. And the refuge is open from 2 to 4:30 every day. But they ask that you call ahead to make an appointment, please. On 0493331414. And just to mention that the refuge is actually having an open day Vide Grenier plant sale type thing this Sunday, Sunday the 6th, from 10 to 6. And apart from going and bagging a bargain, you can also talk to them about adopting or fostering.
Lots of possibilities there, Dawn. I mean, we could have sort of Thompson twins or anything with sisters in it, couldn't we?
Absolutely, there's choices.
What about Matt Bianca?
I can't think. Oh, Bianca because of Bianca. Yes, get out of your lazy bed.
Something like that. Okay, thank you, Dawn. Speak to you next week.
Have a good week. Thank you very much.
That was Woofer of the Week. For more details about this week's Woofer, go to the 106.5 Riviera Radio page on Facebook or our website at rivieraradio.mc. Woofer of the Week on 106.5 Woof Riviera Radio.
The press review is brought to you by BMW Côte d'Azur.
The Guardian urges caution as the British government prepares to decide whether it's going to ease lockdown completely on the 21st of June. For those who are urging the governments to push ahead with the easing of lockdown restrictions, Tuesday's announcements of zero deaths in the UK will be cited as further proof of the necessity to end the delay. Certainly the country's come a long way, says the paper, since the COVID surge, when the daily number of infections reached a peak of more than 68,000. The vaccination programme, perhaps the only unqualified success, says the entire pandemic has changed the calculus again. But, says the paper, we're already seeing echoes from the situation last summer. The number of COVID patients in hospital plummeted to 700 or so before an inexorable rise, fueled by an easing of restrictions and the spread of the Alpha variant, first found in Kent. Now it's the Delta variant, previously known as the India variant, that's seeding itself across the country, and it is spreading fast at a time when only 50% of the population has received a second jab. Now the COVID dashboard may be flashing zero deaths today, but it's also flashing warning signals there may be trouble ahead.
In this morning's Libération, scientists say the human-caused climate change is responsible for more than a third of the world's heat deaths. And the study calculated the human cost of global warming and found the world's heat deaths were being caused by rising temperatures and more extreme weather. Dozens of researchers looked at heat deaths in 732 cities around the world between 1991 and 2018 and found 37% were caused by higher temperatures from human-caused warming. And the experts warn that heat deaths numbers will continue to grow as with rising temperatures.
The Arab News today says that US military officials warned of the threat posed by Hezbollah to Lebanon's stability amid the economic crisis racking the country. The concerns were raised in a discussion on Washington's defence cooperation with Lebanon. The United States has provided support for more than 15 years to the Lebanese armed forces, but the increasing influence of the terrorist-designated Hezbollah in Lebanese politics has strained the partnership.
And in this morning's Times, the UK to hit vaccine milestone with 3/4 of adults jabbed after no daily deaths reported. The UK is on the brink of reaching the milestone of 75% of adults receiving their first jab of the COVID vaccine. It's expected to come the day after no deaths within 28 days of testing positive were reported for the first time since the 30th of July.
The Press Review, brought to you by BMW, Nice Premium Motors, Bayon Avenue Cannes and BMW Store Monaco. Boost your business with the Business Drive BMW range. Find all the BMW Business Drive offers at your car dealer.
On to the pop quiz.
I've made it very easy this morning. You're going to get another hat trick, I think. Question number one. This English pop singer-songwriter was born on this day in 1960. He's performed in the West End musical Chicago and had a huge success in the 1980s with his group, with hits such as Gold, Through the Barricades...
Oh, what's his face?
...and True.
Oh, I can't think of his name now. Move on, I'll come back to it. Come on.
Question number two. He shares his birthday with English drummer who joined the Rolling Stones in 1963 and was born on this day in 1941.
What, the drummer of the Rolling Stones? Charlie Watts?
Yes. And yes. The first person? Well, it's his birthday
as
well.
Yeah, Tony Hadley.
Well done. Happy birthday. And finally...
Well, he's not 80 as well, is he?
Why 80? You lost me.
Tony Hadley.
OK, finally. This is a ballad by an English singer-songwriter. It reached, number 7 in the UK charts in 2006... And it was titled Rehab.
Amy Winehouse.
Correct.
Not really a ballad, is it?
Well.
Ballads tend to be slow.
All right.
Right, I said no.
I did.
I'll play it after the news.
Riviera Radio. Business.
Good morning. Or should I say no?
You're enjoying that song, weren't you?
I was. You know, we're reminded of you.
No.
Yeah. Well, you know, why? I've been trying to get you to seek help for your little problem for years.
Excuse me?
Your addiction.
What is my little problem?
Your addiction to spatchcock chicken.
Oh, okay. I've never liked spatchcock chicken for a while, actually.
Well, you could have had it the other day when you were up there.
Yes, at Gaucho Grill.
What did you have?
Enjoyed that lunch, didn't you? Loose long in the memory. I actually had a steak that was marinated in garlic, and it wasn't that
boring.
There's an amazing butcher by my house where they marinate fillet steak. In a sort of peppery Alabama, I think they call it. It's amazing.
Nice.
The best steak in the world is from a butcher in my house.
You know, if you go to a restaurant and eat steak, you know, it's because you can't decide what to have off the menu. I love the steak.
It's a steak restaurant.
Did you have it well
it's
done?
A Gaucho Grill.
The spatchcock chicken.
I don't mean people were totally shocked that I had a steak.
Did you have it well done?
No, medium rare.
All right, markets. Quite a good day in Europe yesterday, but it's a bit mixed on Wall Street as they spluttered into life after the Memorial Day holiday.
Yeah, European equities rallied to an all-time high as cyclical sectors led gains on optimism that reopenings across the region this summer will boost activity. Stock 600 rose 0.8%, led by miners, car makers and energy stocks. Sentiment was buoyed by a report that EU plans to lift all quarantine requirements starting in July using a digital passport to indicate vaccination status. Rally in European equities has regained some momentum after a quiet month. Stock 600 up 13%. Year to date. On Wall Street, stocks were flat. Mixed manufacturing data showed strong orders growth, but manufacturers are struggling with supply shortages and labour constraints. So S&P 500 and the Nasdaq flat at the close. Looking at uninspiring, slightly mixed start on the European bourses. Currently calling FTSE up 3 points. DAX over in Frankfurt down 22 points. CAC 40 in Paris up 1 point.
Eurozone inflation data is ringing a few alarm bells. The price of garlic's going up.
Yeah, surging to its highest level in more than 2 years in May. Consumer prices rose an annual rate of 2%, up from 1.6% in April, topping the European Central Bank's target for the first time since 2018, rebounding, of course, after several months of negative inflation during the course of last year. 13% jump in energy prices was the biggest contributor. Price pressures also emerging from rebounding demand. Restrictions are slowly lifted, vaccination rates improve, travel conditions begin to normalise. Supply bottlenecks are encouraging producers to hike prices. The IHS Eurozone Purchasing Managers Index for Manufacturing published yesterday showed factories lifted their prices by the most in more than 18 years, robust demand allows them to pass on higher costs to consumers. In terms of the outlook for inflation, I think looking beyond the seasonal, those technical factors, subdued Eurozone inflation is likely to continue as we look through 2022, with weakness in labour markets and household disposable income anchoring core inflation at depressed levels. We expect CPI to peak in the fourth quarter at 2.3%. Price pressures start to fade next year as low base effects start to wash out. In fact, we've got CPI averaging just 1.1% in 2022, well below the target level. Therefore, the accelerated inflation print actually has limited consequences, we think, for policy.
Is it the poor old consumer hasn't been through enough already?
It's been a rough ride, you're absolutely right. But the good news is the consumer's got lots of financial firepower. They've been squirreling away savings at record rates. In fact, Eurozone savings rate, I think, hit 25% during the course of last year at one stage. So they've got lots of money to spend as and when the shops open. And let's hope they do that to drive growth.
So they can spaff it all on PlayStations and holidays in Benidorm, you mean?
Whatever people want to spend their money on, it's not for me to make a judgment on where people decide they can deploy their funds in the best way to derive the most enjoyment for them.
And congratulations, by the way.
Thank you very much, John.
For joining the Property Multi-Millionaires Club. Come on.
UK house prices recorded double-digit growth for the first time since 2014 last month. Prices climbed 10.9% from a year earlier, this according to Nationwide data. The lender saying the increase has been driven by buyers shifting their preferences in the wake of the pandemic. So what have we been seeing? House price inflation has been outperforming apartments. You've seen London underperforming. On the month, prices rose 1.8%. That was double the pace economists expected. Price also being supported by the extension of the stamp duty holiday, although that starts to wind down, I think, from the end of this month. New mortgage guarantee scheme, historically low interest rates, higher savings levels have helped buyers with deposits, UK assets becoming perhaps more attractive again after some of those Brexit uncertainties start to dissipate. Longer term, UK housing market should be supported by the ongoing supply and demand imbalance, though could be vulnerable to higher unemployment, although if you look at expectations around peak unemployment, they've fallen quite substantially over the course of the past couple of months, and eventually, I guess, higher interest rates. But again, we don't expect a hike from the Bank of England over the course of the next couple of years.
No doubt you've been checking the pages of the Surrey Mirror to see how the price increases works out for you in Cobham there.
I haven't looked on an individual basis. I'm interested in what it means for our clients.
Yeah. Are you a bit of a curtain switcher? You know, do you peer through the curtains to see if the new neighbours are up to scratch? You know, whether they've cut their lawn properly, that kind of thing?
I do keep an eye on the general vicinity. That's absolutely correct.
Do you really? Are you in the neighbourhood watch scheme?
No. I don't believe we are, no.
Really? You wouldn't know if you were, would you? Right, foreign exchanges, please.
Pound against dollar coming in at 141.5. We've got the neighbours coming over, actually, on Friday.
Have you?
Euro dollar coming in at 122, first time in 6 years. We're going to get €1.15 for your British pound this morning.
First time in 6 years?
I think so, yes.
You're close then, are you?
Yeah, you know, there's a community spirit went sort of during the first lockdown, actually. So, you know, we're sort of building on that slowly but surely.
Well, just make sure you keep them in the living room, you know, because you don't want them sort of wandering over the house and inspecting it to see if it measures up to scratch.
It's outdoor only. Outdoor only.
Foreign exchange.
It'll take a long time before. We've just done the foreign exchange.
Oh, have we? Sorry.
What's wrong with you? You're really losing it today. Come on.
So I got carried away with the Cobham property prices.
Yes.
There's no doubt you have as well.
Desperately tapping that into your computer to see what the figure was.
Thank you very much.
Have a good day, sir.
Speak to you tomorrow. Hang Potts and Barclays.
On FM and DAB Plus across the Côte d'Azur, on your phone and worldwide online. This is Riviera Radio with the latest local news for the south of France.
Sarah Lyser has the top stories across the Riviera.
Two people have died in a fatal road accident on Tuesday afternoon. The man and woman were riding a motorbike on the road from Cap d'Aye to La Turbie when they collided head-on with another vehicle. Police have opened an investigation to determine the exact circumstances of the collision. An investigation has been opened by police in Villefranche-sur-Mer after gunfire at a primary school on Tuesday afternoon. Shots were heard shortly after 4:30 p.m. at the Joseph Calderoni Primary School located on Avenue Clemenceau in Villefranche-sur-Mer. Most of the students were not on the premises at the time and no injuries were reported. Police are to determine if it was an accidental or intentional shooting. Pharmacists and general practitioners have aired their exasperation following delays to the deliveries of vaccination doses against COVID. The situation was made worse after a truck delivering 145,000 doses of the Moderna vaccine to four regions in the south of France broke down last week. The vehicle was due to supply the vaccine to four regions in the south, including the Provence-Alpes-Côte d'Azur. Pharmacists and GPs in the region say that they get the impression that they are being forgotten by the authorities in the fight against COVID. Meanwhile, as France prepares to enter the third stage of a progressive end to lockdown next Wednesday, June the 9th, with the curfew being moved from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m, Nice City Council has announced that several streets in the city will become completely pedestrianised. The town hall also announced that musical entertainment will also be on offer during the evenings. British nationals in four EU member states have yet to apply for a post-Brexit residence, meaning they risk losing the right to live and work there unless they file their demands within 30 days. UK citizens living in France, Malta, Luxembourg and Latvia have until the 30th of June to apply in order to secure their post-Brexit rights. The Netherlands did have the same deadline, but have since extended it to the 1st of October. As part of efforts to enforce a low emission zone around the French capital, high polluting diesel vehicles, more than 15 years old, have been banned from entering the Paris region on weekdays between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Heavy goods vehicles, buses, coaches and motorised two-wheelers registered before July 2004 are also affected by the restrictions, which took force on Tuesday the 1st of June. Meanwhile, after a complicated year due to repeated lockdowns, the SNCF rail network intends to get back on track, launching more attractive prices and a new Advantage card to promote an environmentally responsible means of transport. New night connections and improvements on the intercities will be accompanied with lower prices, even for last-minute bookings. All tickets will be exchangeable and refundable up to 3 days before departure. Finally, with less than 10 days before the kickoff of the Euro football in Rome, the Blues play their first preparation match tonight in Nice against Wales. The match will kick off at 9:05 at the Allianz Riviera in Nice.
Riviera Radio, sports news.
The SNCF is getting back on track.
Did you like that? I wondered if you'd notice.
Tennis, Rafael Nadal and Novak Djokovic both cruised through their first round games of the French Open on Tuesday. Nadal, who's bidding for a 21st Grand Slam title and his 14th French Open success, beat Alexei Popperin of Australia in straight sets, while Djokovic eased through 6-2, 6-4, 6-2 against Tennis Sangren of the United States. In the women's event, the two-time Grand Slam champion Petra Kvitova has been forced to withdraw following a freak ankle injury sustained during her post-match media duties. Kvitova fell after Sunday's first-round win over Greet Minnan, and her second-round opponent Alina Vasina has been given a bye to the last 32. It's dangerous working in the media. Elsewhere, world number one Ashley Barty made it through to round two thanks to a three-set win over Banana Pera, although she needed lengthy treatment for a hip problem, and the fifth seed Elina Svitolina beat the teenage debutante Ocean Babel. Cricket. The first test between England and New Zealand starts at Lord's today. England are missing a number of key players, but captain Joe Root says he wants the side to put on a show for the fans. It's the first time that England will play a home match in front of fans since 2019 because of the coronavirus pandemic. Play starts at noon, French time, and the weather's looking good. In fact, it's going to be hotter in London today than it is in the south of France. Football. Carlo Ancelotti's off. Here are the details from BBC Sports.
BBC Premier League update from the home of Premier League football.
Hello, I'm Al Ross at BBC Sport, and Carlo Ancelotti has left Everton to become the new manager of Real Madrid. The Italian leaves Goodison Park just 18 months into a 4.5-year deal. The BBC's chief football writer Phil McNulty says it surprised the club.
I think Everton have been stunned by the speed of the developments. The story started to break late last night. At the end of the season, they were all planning to sit down. Ancelotti and the director of football, Marcel Brands, to plot the summer. But there was still hope that he was the person who would attract the players to take them forward. The owner, Farhad Moshiri, was going to be happy to back him again this summer.
The former Wolves manager, Nuno Espirito Santo, and the former Bournemouth manager, Eddie Howe, are the favourites for the job with British bookmakers. The Manchester United captain Harry Maguire may not be fit in time for the start of Euro 2020. The tournament gets underway on June the 11th. His national manager with England, Gareth Southgate, has chosen Maguire for his leadership, but may only be able to use him later in the tournament.
Well, we don't know that yet. It's going to be tight for the first game, there's no question. Again, I think he's such a good player, and because we had the additional size of squad, the fact that leadership which is growing in him all the time, we wanted to take that opportunity to bring him into the squad.
And Chelsea and Leicester have been fined nearly $32,000 after an ugly brawl between the teams at the end of their Premier League match. Thomas Tuchel's side won 2-1 in a match that played a key role in the Blues finishing above Leicester in the Premier League's top four. And for more football news from the BBC, go to bbc.com/football.
BBC Premier League update from the home of Premier League football.
Can't be right, you know, you sign a 4.5-year contract and leave after 18 months and that's all right, you know. Surely breach of contract has to come in.
How did you get away with that?
Well, it happens all the time in football. You know, you sign 4-year deals and then you get tempted away somewhere else and leave after 2 years and no one says anything, but that's the football. That's the football. The England manager Gareth Southgate says that failing to reach the semi-finals of Euro 2020 will be classed as a failure. England made the last four of the World Cup in 2018 and a run to the final in Euro 2020 would see them play all but one of their games at Wembley. Southgate said the team had to learn to live with expectations and there are a number of friendly games tonight as we warm up for Euro 2020. Scotland are away at the Netherlands, England host Austria, Germany play Denmark and as Sarah said earlier, France are hosting Wales in Nice.
The weather forecast, brought to you by Accelerate Marine.
For coastal areas up to 20 miles offshore the Almaraz Sea in the Var, the general situation is a depression 1,010 millibars between the Balearics and Tunisia and high pressure 1,020 millibars over northern Italy. Winds are easterly, force 2 to 4, the sea is slight, visibility is good. Barometric pressure at Saint-Jean-Cap-Ferrat, 1,016 millibars and the outlook for Thursday, clear skies, force 1 to 3 variable, winds calm seas and good visibility. For North Corsica, winds are southeasterly, force 3 to 4. The sea is slight, visibility is good. Barometric pressure at Cap Corse, 1,017 millibars. And the outlook for Thursday, clear skies, force 2 to 4, variable winds, slight seas and good visibility.
The weather forecast, brought to you by Accelerate Marine. For enhanced, high-performing connectivity on board your yacht, speak to our expert team today about our VSAT and 4G packages. Visit connectmyyacht.com.
The weather forecast, brought to you by Servibat, the home closing specialist in Nice and Villefranche.
Had a bit of rain this morning, actually. Sunshine and showers for the rest of the morning by the looks of it, clearing during the afternoon, and light variable winds. Top temperature 22 degrees, overnight lows 15 to 17 degrees with clear skies. Thursday and Friday mainly fine, highs of 23 to 25 degrees.
The weather forecast, brought to you by Servibat Nice and Villefranche. For 30 years, specialising in home closures, windows, blinds, shutters, reinforced glazing and doors. Feel good at home. Visit servibat06.fr.
Finally,
Jammy Dodgers.
Ooh, no.
The Italian chocolate company Ferrero is set to buy the Jammy Dodgers manufacturer Burton's Biscuits for an undisclosed fee. Burton's, which also makes, of course, the Wagon Wheels and Maryland cookies, employs about 2,000 people across six factories in the UK. Ferrero said on Tuesday that its subsidiary has entered into a definitive agreement to acquire Burton's from the current owners.
Gone for a Burton.
Yeah, they'll be taking over the control of production sites in the UK, such as in Blackpool, Dorset, and as well in Scotland, in Edinburgh.
So does that mean in the future they'll be serving Jammy Dodgers at the Ambassador's reception?
They might just do that.
With these Jammy Dodgers, you're spoiling us.
Yeah, oh, no. I love Jammy Dodgers.
No.
No, they're not your favourite. Oh, no. OK. No, I haven't had one for years.
Fig roll, maybe, but not a Jammy Dodger.
Oh, fig roll. Do you remember those?
You're up to date. The news is on the website, revereradio.mc. Possibly worse things to be addicted to, but as Jim Capaldi said, love hurts. It's 11 minutes past nine, the full English breakfast show, and it's Wellbeing Wednesday. Gavin Sharp is here, and we're talking about addiction this week. Hello again, Gavin.
Hello, good morning.
Yes, it's a sensitive subject, as I said a little bit earlier. I mean, we're all familiar with drink and drug addiction, but can we be addicted to behaviours like sex, work addiction, shopping, etc.?
We can. And, you know, as we were just saying before the break, we sort of think about addiction in terms of alcohol, in terms of drugs. But what we've learned recently is pretty much anything which is pleasurable, and therefore that includes behaviours like shopping, gambling, iPhones. These are all things that we can and do become, or some of us, addicted to.
So people say they've been born with an addictive personality, but is that strictly true? Are we born addicts? Is it a choice? Can you be addicted to anything? Is it genetic?
Well, you touch upon a sensitive area in the therapy field because the research is mixed. If I had to summarise, I would say that there is some compelling evidence that there is some genetic element to addiction. If I had to generalize, I would say that most of the clients that I see who have an addiction, certainly not born with addiction, but it's as a result of some kind of early trauma. And these are people in immense pain.
So I read quite a lot about children who've grown up with parents who drink heavily and it puts them off for life. So not strictly genetic, perhaps.
Correct. And that's why the research is mixed. And, you know, if I'm the child of an alcoholic, I might have also learned that this is a coping mechanism. So there's that element of, you know, how much of it is genetic and how much of it is that's what dad or mum did. They drank to manage their emotions. And so, hey, that's what I do.
Well, the two big ones really are smoking and drinking, aren't they? I mean, they're the ones that cost health services around the world billions and billions of dollars every year. I mean, presumably you deal with quite a lot of that, do you?
Absolutely. I don't tend to deal with smoking because it's a sort of different kind of treatment and it's a sort of and a different type of addiction. In terms of what costs the medical industry more, that's a great point because there are so many addictions that go untreated because we may not realize that we're a workaholic or that we may not realize that that we've got an addiction to a behavior like shopping or sex. So how much does that cost when that goes untreated? And there's so much stigma around, can I really be addicted to something that's fun? You know, come on, you're taking the joy out of life. And so sometimes it's much harder to own the fact that I'm addicted to something which most of us are not, and most of us just enjoy.
When you say smoking is a different kind of addiction, it is a physical addiction, you know, with the nicotine and everything, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Nicotine addiction is real. There's a physical and a mental dependency. I think because, you know, when we look at the consequences of smoking, the negative consequences, it's more of a sort of drip, drip, you know, where slowly, and I'm aware I might be looking at two smokers, but I'm, you know, it's a drip, drip effect on our health, and therefore it's less dramatic. People don't tend to end up in the therapy room in crisis in the way that they might do if they've got a drug addiction or an alcohol addiction.
Apart from when you give up.
Well, I hold my hand up and say, you know, that's
when you give up, you end up in a therapy room because you get angry at everyone.
That's the one that's got me, and it's the only one. That's tobacco, you know. And I said it's easy to give up smoking. I've done it 28 times, but so I've now got a nicotine patch on.
Uh-huh. So, and when did that go on?
This morning.
Just before the programme.
And how's it going so far, Rob?
Well, it's all right, actually. But, I mean, I've been thinking, because I've given up so many times and I've stuck to it 2 or 3 months sometimes and a bit longer. But, you know, I keep thinking I've got to stop it, so...
It's the bottle of wine next to you that, you know, I've noticed that since you've given up. No, but... On smoking, you know, you just touched, I've given up several times. That's a real clue. How do I know if I'm addicted to something? And very often we've told ourselves, you know what, I'm going to stop doing this this behaviour or this substance, this drink, and then we last for a week or a month and we go back to it. So repeated attempts to stop doing something and then we fail, yeah, that's one of the signs of addiction.
It's a weird one, smoking, though, because, I mean, for example, if I take a long-distance flight and you're not allowed to smoke in the airport and then during the flight and in the airport at the other end, or you go somewhere like a cinema or a concert where you're not allowed to smoke, I don't, like, get physical withdrawal symptoms. So you think, well, why do I carry on doing it?
I think you're lucky because, and I say this as a non-smoker, but some people do, and some people really struggle. When they get off their aeroplane, you know, they are just rushing to the smoking section of the airport or to get outdoors because some of them really have severe withdrawal symptoms.
The other obviously major one is alcohol. And we all like a drink and we've all had too much on occasion. But there's a vast difference between getting blotto on a Friday night and doing it day in, day out, morning till night, isn't there?
Absolutely. So if we take a step back and we say, okay, so how do I know I'm addicted? Because if I go to the pub and I like a drink, or I come home after a stressful day and pour myself a glass of wine, is that addiction? And for me, I will tend to look for a handful of criteria. So I will look to see not how much someone drinks and not how frequently they drink. What I will look to see is whether this person has out of control behavior. So they are doing something which they're doing it compulsively. There are negative consequences, so eventually they're spending less time with their family or it's affecting their job. They've tried to stop and haven't managed to. And when they do stop, there's withdrawal symptoms. And that's the kind of cluster. I mean, there are some others too, but I look at that little cluster of symptoms and that gives me a clue that this might be an addiction.
Because a lot of addicts just won't admit they're addicted. Oh, no, I can handle it, I can give it up. But you know, despite all the warnings from family or sort of behaviour with unfortunate consequences, they convince themselves they're in control and they can stop whenever they want.
Absolutely. Denial is such a strong defence mechanism. And one of the things that I will say to someone who sat in the therapy room is I will say, OK, so I hear the denial. If it's not a problem, how about giving it up for 30 days and let's see what happens? And it's really interesting. Now, some people can give up for a month or 2 or 3 months, but very often just the idea of giving it up and then someone actually starts to realize that, okay, I may have a problem. So I had someone who she was saying to me that, you know, drink isn't really a problem because it's very periodic. Even though when she drinks, it's pretty severe. So I said, would you be prepared to give up for 30 days? And she said, absolutely. She said, I can't start yet. And I said, okay, why not? Because next month, this is, I'm going back a few years, next month is the Grand Prix and we always go out. And I said, okay, well, let's forget that. How about after that? And she said, well, I can't really do that because then we're going to Dubai and we often, we party there. So that wouldn't be a good time. And we sort of worked out that really every single month you've got something. So that is preventing you from giving up drinking. Can you hear yourself?
Well, it's the social situations as well, isn't it? Because, I mean, you go out to a bar or a restaurant and everyone's drinking wine or beer, and, you know, if you have got a problem with alcohol and you want to stop, it's very, very hard to resist joining in. Oh, go on, just have one, you'll be okay, you know. And it's such social pressure. I mean, actually, the last few years, I mean, the amount of drinkable non-alcoholic beers and even wines that have come onto the market, it's quite refreshing. So there is an alternative now.
There is an alternative, but you touch an interesting point, which is peer pressure. I'm working with someone who is in their 20s, and this person's whole social life, all of their friends, is geared around heavy drinking and recreational drugs. So it's hard when someone looks at me and says, but if I do this, if I give up, you're asking me to give up all of my friends, my social network. And so you're asking someone two things in that instance. You're asking them to give up their coping mechanism. There's a huge amount of loss with addiction. So they're giving up their coping mechanism. And now, where do I start? Because this is what all my friends do every weekend, and I'll have no friends left.
Well, it starts off with a light-hearted question before we tackle some more serious issues. An anonymous Burnley fan says, can you ask Gavin what I can do about my addiction Monday to Friday? I can't stop listening to Riviera Radio. We know who you are.
There's no cure.
There's no cure.
There's not for the breakfast show. I mean, when you go to the doctor and they tell you, you've got to listen to the breakfast show. I just Googled it in the break, and there was a survey I saw last year that 51% of millennials are addicted to their favourite FM station.
Really?
Yeah.
Gosh.
It was done, I think, by a radio show. That was their research. But here's the thing. We can be addicted to anything that gives us pleasure. So when we do something like listening to the radio or eating a nice food, having sex, our brain is releasing a chemical called dopamine. And dopamine is what we call the pleasure chemical. So the reward center in our brain gets this rush of dopamine and we think, oh, this is nice. And our memory center says, oh, I must remember to do this again because it's pleasurable. So if I listen to the radio, I'm going to have a dopamine hit. If suddenly my whole life gets taken over by listening to the breakfast show, and if I can't get my daily fix of Rob and Sarah, I'm going to be really anxious. You could have a problem.
Joking aside, Gavin, I mean, over the years, I've seen a lot of friends suffer either through alcohol, drugs, gambling, you name it. For one or two people I knew a long time ago actually died after overdosing on heroin. And, and the opioid crisis, especially in the United States, provoked by doctors handing out opioids like sweets for painkillers. I mean, people don't get into that on purpose, but the end result is the same.
Absolutely. And the more severe when we're looking at opioids, we're looking at substances, there's the two elements now. So there's the psychological dependency, and then there's my body. My body is craving what's going into it. So if you take it away, my body's going to have a reaction. And those are the people who I will sometimes say, you know what I would like you to do? I would like you to spend a little bit of time in a rehabilitation facility, do some inpatient work. Because coming off of opioids or something similar, this needs to be handled by a doctor. And then when you've got a handle on the addiction, the physical addiction, then we'll start looking at some of the mental aspects. But absolutely, without treatment and usually inpatient treatment, you're absolutely right, the results can be fatal.
And the other major one I wanted to mention is gambling, because gambling, as I said in the last hour, destroys lives. I've seen people sort of spaff their entire mortgage up against the wall in a matter of weeks because they just cannot stop going to the bookies or betting online, which is even more dangerous than the bookmakers.
Absolutely. And gambling addicts will tell themselves, firstly, there's the denial. And then they get into this whole realm of kind of distorted thinking of, oh, it's okay, I can win back what I've lost. Or their whole reality becomes distorted. Or you talk to a gambling addict and they'll say, no, it's okay, because that's my lucky color, that's my lucky number. And so they sort of get consumed into this whole world. But it's the same, and gambling is one of the only, if not, I might be right in saying it's the only behavioral addiction that at the moment is actually officially recognized as a mental health disorder. We're still working on other areas like sex and shopping, which sort of fall into other categories in terms of official diagnoses.
The thing about gambling in particular is it's a vicious circle, isn't it? It's because, I've lost all that money. I'm going to have to try and win it back. How can I tell my wife that I've, lost thousands and thousands of pounds? And then, I'll borrow some money and put another bet on and it'll all come right. But, the chances of it coming right are minimal.
Yeah, absolutely. And that cycle, that tends to go with all addiction, which is that I'm doing something which in the short term distracts me. It takes me away from my emotional pain. So I do something, and then after I've done it, I feel intense shame. I feel guilty that I've done it. I can't actually believe that. In one case, I worked with someone who had pretty much depleted the kids' school or university fund. So there is so much shame that goes with addiction. And because addicts are not great at self-regulating their emotions, how am I going to manage my shame? I know, I'll go to the casino and then I'll gamble again, because then I get to go into my little bubble and I disappear. And I'm just stuck in this loop of doing something that in the short term gives me pleasure, then I feel guilty and shame. And to make the shame bearable, I do the behaviour again and again.
Because I noticed this in this person I'm talking about. You know, I was at school with him, and we used to go to the pub, and we'd all be sitting, and he'd just be feeding pound coins into the fruit machine endlessly. And the jackpot was something like pathetic, like £5 or something, but he couldn't stop feeding money into the machine. And, you know, suddenly all the bells would ring and the money would come out and he'd, oh, great, I've won a fiver. And he'd put it all back again, straight away. And then, you know, in the middle of the evening, so I'm going home now. I said, why? So I haven't got any money left. It's, you know, and that really spiraled into something extremely serious when he got into later life, and it didn't end well.
And you know, just when that person is putting in the pound coins or whatever it is, they're very often in a trance-like state. So at that point, you know, when we sort of look at the press and we think, how on earth has that person done something so stupid? What were they thinking? And one of the effects of addiction is when we're getting that dopamine rush, we can't access the thinking part of our brain, the prefrontal cortex. So in that moment, when you're saying, hey, mate, what are you doing? Or don't send that text, or don't go talk to that prostitute, or whatever it is that they're doing, they're gone. They're already high. So, and there's a lot of preoccupation and preoccupied thinking that goes with addiction. So the moment your mate in that instance is even thinking about gambling, he's starting to get high.
Okay, a couple of questions before the news. First of all, well, we won't mention anyone's name this morning, just keep it all anonymous. To settle a family dispute, can you be a functioning addict?
It's a great question. I get asked this a lot. And I think for a limited period of time, yes, we can hide our addiction. But the nature of addiction is that we will always need to do more of the same thing to get the same hit, because there's a tolerance threshold. So if it was two drinks that got me hit the spot, at some point I'm going to increase it to three, and at some point to four, because I no longer get the same high. So usually with addiction, the functioning addict will survive, will function well for so long, and then unfortunately at some point things come crashing down.
Okay, another question. Our teenage son constantly smokes weed. He says it's fine and everyone his age does it. Neither my husband or I smoked weed when we were younger. We obviously understand that lots of people do. Should we be worried? I mean, I would just say that I'm not going to say I never inhaled, but when I was young, I mean, the kind of drugs that were on the market then compared with now, we're kind of tamed. I mean, it's frightening what's out there and available these days. So, you know, it's every parent's nightmare, isn't it, really?
Absolutely. And you touch on a very good point, which is the stuff that is in weed today is much stronger than was in weed when you were young 5 years ago, Rob. So it's it's changed. To the question, I don't know how old the teenage son is. The younger, the greater the chance of there being a dependency. Should we be worried, I think was in the question. I think I would have a chat with your teenage son, because clearly you know about it, and ask how often are they smoking weed, and look for signs. You know, is this someone that is constantly irritable? Are they no longer mixing with their friends? Is it affecting their sleep? Just, you know, one word of not caution, but one word for reassurance, that's the word I'm looking for, reassurance, is that, you know, most people who smoke weed will not become addicted. Most people who have a drink won't become addicted. So I don't want to scare people, I don't want to panic them, but there is sometimes a misconception that marijuana, that weed is not addictive, and it does have addictive qualities.
Addiction is the subject with Gavin Sharp from Riviera Wellbeing on our regular Wellbeing Wednesday, every first Wednesday of the month. Gavin, we do have a lot of questions. They're still coming in now, actually. But first of all, you are actually a specialist sex and love addiction therapist, and I know you'd like to enlarge on that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of the most, I think, misunderstood behavioural addictions. And so people think, wow, sex addiction, that must be fun. That's the one I want to have. And I will tell you, for people who are addicted to sex, it's anything but fun. So if I say what sex addiction isn't about how often we have sex. It's not about the type of sex we're having. It's not a moral issue.
Well, so it's not about bonking them.
It's not. No, it's not. And it's not about how often we bonk. It's sex addiction is actually an intimacy disorder. And most sex addicts mistake intensity for intimacy. So like all these things, there's nothing wrong. There's a lot right with sex. But it's my relationship with sex that's unhealthy. So when I start using sex as a way to self-regulate my emotions, when I do it compulsively, when I do it so that there are negative consequences, my relationships are suffering. I can't stop doing it. I get withdrawal symptoms. I'm anxious. I'm planning my next conquest. All of that says that someone has an unhealthy relationship with sex. And actually, most sex addicts are not that interested in sex. It's just that's how they distract themselves. And it's the same for love. Most love addicts are not interested in love, but they compulsively seek romance or relationships. So what's happening there is that they're using the pursuit of love to distract them from their pain, from their emotional reality.
Pursuing my next conquest, I'd settle for a minor invasion at the moment.
Hold on, yeah. Is it still an addiction if it's with the same person?
Can be.
Because is that not a different addiction? Is that not being...
No, again, there's nothing wrong in having as much sex as you want with the same person or as many people as you want. So I don't judge when someone comes to see me and they say, I'm having lots of sex. I don't make any judgment. If someone comes and says that as a result of this, we're having problems, then I might explore it. So if someone is, it's unlikely to be, but it can be with the same partner. But usually there's secrecy. There's usually something going on outside the primary relationship.
And also, if you're saying addicted to sex and you're sleeping around and even say you've got a partner and you're still sleeping around, you have to be extremely careful with the STDs. I mean, they're getting worse and worse. And if you aren't careful, you find yourself on a course of yellow pills or much worse. And actually, for some STDs, there's no cure now.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think with... one of the first things I will say to a sex addict is actually go get yourself checked out. If their partner doesn't know, we're talking about how are you going to disseminate this information to your partner? Because this concerns me that, again, I'm not making a judgment about how often you have sex and who you have sex with. But if you're not having safe sex and you are still sleeping with your partner, they have a right to know because there's a safety issue here.
Well, people have been jailed for not informing a partner they've got HIV and then sleeping with them. You know, they've actually been sent to jail for it. So it's a really serious subject. Okay, we do have lots of questions, so let's just plough on. And now this will be familiar with anyone who's got a teenage son or daughter. I think my daughter's addicted to her iPhone. Is there such a thing? She has it with her during mealtimes, is constantly texting her friends and just can't be without it. So I worry about what it's doing to her mental health. She also plays video games all weekend. What should we do? Is this a real problem? We've tried taking it away from her. It doesn't work. I think a lot of her peers do the same, which obviously doesn't help either.
Oh, give her up for adoption. No, look, as you say, there are so many parents who struggle with this. And I think the first thing I would ask is it an addiction or is it overuse? Because certainly my generation, I didn't grow up with mobile phones. And then when they did sort of come into my life, we didn't have all the apps and texting and etc. So we, our generation, don't quite understand the way that our kids are interacting through their phones. So we, I think, have a tendency sometimes to say, my child isn't meeting with their friends, they're very isolated, we go out for dinner and they're sat around the table and all they're doing is they're on the phone. And actually, I may be out for dinner with 5 or 6 people, but what if my child is texting 15 or 20 people? Who's more connected or disconnected, me or them? So I think that the person who wrote in said they're very concerned about their daughter's mental health. So again, if you see signs that this person is kind of losing control of reality, they don't have any friends, they don't have any hobbies, they cannot be without the phone, then I think I would engage them in a conversation and try and understand what's happening. But it could just be they're using it a lot more than we would, and we struggle with that.
Weren't we always on the phone when we were kids?
Yeah,
the extension would go, you're not still on the phone, are you?
My father, yes. Or television, like you would watch too much television.
Yeah, absolutely. So there is something, and I don't want to dismiss the person who, despite the fact I just said give your kid up for adoption, I don't want to dismiss the potential severity. But you're right, every generation looks and says, my grandfather thought the television would kill the family. And so every generation we look and we don't quite understand it. And I remember my father picking up the phone and saying, get off the phone. Who pays the bills? And I'm like, you do, but can you hang up, Dad? I'm on the phone.
Yeah. Back to the alcohol. I can go months without touching alcohol, but every so often I have a blowout weekend. It's my way of letting off steam. I probably drink too much, and sometimes I don't remember what's happened. My daughter thinks I'm addicted. I do not think so, given I can go weeks without touching it. I think it's a helpful coping mechanism, as I have a stressful life. Is my daughter, who I love dearly, being oversensitive?
My immediate response is I think you have a very caring daughter, and most loved ones of addicts, are in this dilemma of how do we help someone who we see suffering. What I took, and it's impossible for me to obviously give an accurate answer based on limited information. However, what I did take from that was there could be some denial. This is a coping mechanism because I have a stressful life. There's a big difference between having a drink and unwinding at the end of the day and having a blowout weekend. And if this person is having blowout weekends to the point where they don't remember stuff, then I would be concerned.
What did you say?
Oh, crikey. That's me too. I'm with you on that one.
I'm not an addict, but I can see addiction all around me. I wonder, are you always an addict or do you fully recover? Could I help a friend recover or should I not even try?
Great. Another great question. I think that different people in recovery will give a different view. Most people who've had an addiction who go into recovery will say, I'm always in recovery. Like if you hear someone like Elton John, for example, he'll talk about his addiction for many, many years to drink or drugs, and then he'll say, I'm 24 years sober, or whatever it is. So he will count the sobriety, and he will always be aware of the triggers, the things that could lead him back to addiction. And in that sense, that awareness of what could take him back is also what keeps him healthy.
It's saying that you must hit rock bottom to have a successful recovery. Is that a myth in your view, or do you think
I think it's a myth that you have to hit a rock bottom. I think there's a reality that lots of people, before they seek help, something has happened. Their loved one has said, if you do not sort yourself out, I'm going. Or someone unfortunately ends up and they've woken up, I've met clients, they woke up in the jail in Monaco, and even with the sea view, it's not great. And so that's the rock bottom. But we don't have to hit a rock bottom.
Sometimes it doesn't work though, does it? Because you just do see cases where people just end up on the streets and they've lost everything through drink or drugs or whatever.
Yeah, so it requires, you're right, so we hit the rock bottom, and then it requires action. And that goes back to almost when we started the show, I need to accept, which is such a fundamental part of recovery, I have to accept that I have a problem.
Brilliant Bobby Womack across 110th Street talks about addiction and junkies. Mine is you at breakfast and then LBC for the rest of the day. Help! You sound a bit like me. Maybe we should get together. I could show you my etchings.
So another one addicted to the radio, addicted to your show.
Gosh, questions keep coming. I think a family member has struggled with sex addiction and they admitted recently they also have a problem with drink and gambling. And they tried to give up, but nothing works. How can we help? Because quite often it's not one addiction, it's several together. Alcohol and gambling, alcohol, sex and gambling.
Absolutely. We get what we call co-occurring and cross-addictions. Sometimes I need one addiction to start my other. Very often it's drink that will take me to the drugs. And then sometimes I just have multiple addictions. So it's complicated. I would say that that's probably a case where I would say to someone, you might want to look at some inpatient facility, some kind of rehab facility. If I had to generalize, if someone comes in and they have drink and drugs, and then there's a behavioral addiction like sex, I would say we have to start somewhere, and I'd say start with the drink and drugs because they're disinhibitors. And when I'm disinhibited, I am more likely to be engaging in my other addictive behaviours.
Yeah, that's interesting because when you came in last time, we were talking about this subject at the end of the show last time, you mentioned you'd been seeing somebody who had a serious problem with alcohol and cocaine, and that can be a very lethal combination.
Yeah, absolutely. And the person was sort of saying, I don't have a drink problem, but I do have a drug problem. And I'm saying, well, actually, you have both because they're going hand in hand. So absolutely. So you need to treat, I mean, those are both substances. So you need to treat both the substances. But actually, interestingly, for that person, then he'd also get himself into more trouble later on doing other stuff because of the amount of drugs and drink in his system.
Well, we know about the dangers of alcohol, but actually cocaine, the older you get, the more dangerous it gets as well.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
A little bit lighthearted, possibly. I confess I enjoy my daily chocolate intake. Thank God I can get Hershey's here. Sorry, it's my guilty pleasure. I sit in front of the TV and enjoy it, so I don't care what anyone says. It's a joy, not an addiction.
Well, I'm with you, Rob, because why not Cadbury's? I mean...
No.
No?
Nor Hershey's, no. It's
really? Too sweet. Sarah, what would you...
I don't know, any chocolate will do. Yeah. What's the difference between a joy and an addiction? Because I'm having problems understanding where the limit is to say that you don't have an addiction and you do have an addiction and it's not just a joy and letting off steam.
I think if it stays as a joy and it's less likely to be an addiction, because actually most addicts, once they start engaging in their addiction, they actually afterwards have shame, they feel guilty. So if you take the I suspect the person writing in does as I do, and I have a sweet tooth, and why not enjoy your chocolate in front of the TV? But if you're doing it to the point where, you know, when we talk about food addiction, which is, there's two types of sort of eating disorders that we see most commonly. There's food addiction, which is I cannot stop eating sugary and starchy foods. And the second is the sort of the binge eating. It doesn't even matter what the food is. I'm just doing it. I don't even want it. And I'm doing it to such a point that I know it's affecting my health. And without it, I start to feel anxious. I start to get withdrawal symptoms. So there's a big difference. And I don't enjoy it. Why am I doing it? I have so much shame afterwards. Rather than, you know, it's a guilty pleasure. And after I've had my chocolate, I think, well, that was a bit naughty. I'll eat less tomorrow. I think there's a big difference.
But you can be a functioning chocoholic.
She says, looking at me, nodding. I think you can be a functioning... Yeah, and unless it becomes... you know, unless it becomes a food addiction, and it's unlikely to be just food. It'll probably be cakes. It'll probably be carbs. It will probably just overtake your life.
Fizzy drinks, should add that to the list, because that's seriously dangerous, especially those sort of Diet Cokes and stuff like that.
Yeah, a lot of kids very much addicted to the
people
fizzy
go through litres of that in a day, and it actually makes them really ill.
Yeah. It's all about willpower, isn't it? Just being able to say...
What's that?
I don't know. I don't have much of it. I never know when to stop. I hate it when somebody says you shouldn't do something.
Yeah, you do what you want, Sarah.
It
it's
more.
Absolutely fine.
No, I'll do it even more. If somebody says don't have another one, it's the one you shouldn't have.
I started to make making chocolate tarts recently.
Oh.
Yeah, my family loved them, and I really like chocolate. But I've gone off the kind of really sweet Cadbury stuff. It's got to be sort of darker or with a good cocoa content in it. But I make these chocolate tarts every week. And last week I went on strike and didn't make one. Where's the chocolate tart? Where's the chocolate tart? I'm having withdrawal symptoms.
Yes, so family of addicts there. But you know, picking up on what you said, Sarah, I think it is partly about willpower, but I think if it was just about willpower, then I don't think we'd have that many addicts. I think it's more complicated than it's just willpower or just stopping, because... Again, if we go back to what I said at the beginning of the show, most addiction, what's it about? The hole in the soul. I am someone who's in a lot of pain and I'm using something to self-medicate. That could be chocolate, it could be opioids, it could be shopping. And therefore, I need to deal with the pain in order to be able to then process the behaviour to stop. So I think it's partly willpower, but probably deeper than that.
Last question and then conclusions, please, Gavin. Bit more of a light-hearted one. When are you going to do a show with Gavin and Henk Potts? Two of the best things on the radio. Money. People can be addicted to money.
They certainly can.
Anyone workaholics.
And money. I've studied financial disorders, so I would, very happily just do a show on money.
Okay, conclusions for this week's show, Gavin.
Conclusions. Look, I'd like to pick up on what you said, Rob, which is it's a serious subject. And of course, we're making light of it because we're on the breakfast show. But if there's anything that has been said and that you've been triggered by it, please seek help, because addiction tears families apart. And some of the behavioral addictions, it's easy to see if someone's an alcoholic, because they will show signs, they slur their words. It's easy to see if someone's abusing drugs, but it's less easy to see if someone is addicted to sex or to work. They're hidden. So please seek help. People do recover from addictions, and you're right, you know, this is serious stuff.
And if anyone wants more information, gavin@rivierawellbeing.com is your email address.
Absolutely.
Gavin@rivierawellbeing.com. Do we know what we're talking about next month yet?
I thought, how about next month we go a bit lighter? A bit heavy, wasn't it, today?
I need a drink after today's program.
Still round, isn't it?
Yeah.
Rob's just ripped off his nicotine patch, I noticed. Yeah. People pleasing. Are you a people pleaser? Are you able to say no to people, or does it really matter what other people think? And then how good are you at setting boundaries?
People pleasers.
Yeah.
Not people eaters. Purple pizzeries. People eaters.
People pleasers. We sometimes call it the disease to please. Do you suffer from that?
Gosh. Right.
Don't look at me.
No, I haven't.
Yeah, of course I do.
Haven't seen a lot of that in the restaurants around here. But...
No. Well, as you said, when you went to your Antibes restaurant, they kicked you out, it sounds like, as you got in into the bar.
They didn't want to take our money.
Give it to me, it's fine.
Gavin, thank you as always. And we'll look forward to next month's episode. And there will be a podcast of today's discussion on our website, rivieraradio.mc, and also your website, which is
rivierawellbeing.com.
rivierawellbeing.com.